Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Welcome to an Everything Iconic Pop Dive with me, Danny Pellegrino, where my guests and I deep dive into iconic pop culture touchstones. Today, we're diving into the early part of Mariah Carey's career. Between 1990 and 1995, she released five hit albums. That's five albums in 5 years! Her self-titled debut album was released on June 12, 1990, selling over 6 million copies and winning the Grammy for Best New Artist. Since that debut, she's had 18 number one hits, more than any other solo artist in history. I mean, we could talk about a lot of different Mariah eras, but we're going to focus on 1990 to 1995. Born in Long Island, New York, it's unclear whether she was born in 1969 or 1970, as Mariah celebrates anniversaries, not birthdays, so Wikipedia lists both years as her birthday. She has an unparalleled vocal range and countless records in the books. She spent the most weeks at number one with One Sweet Day off the Daydream album. And just this year, Billboard released a list of the biggest hits in Hot 100 history. Mariah Carey bested every other artist with a record 11 entries on the list. She's not just a singer, she's a writer who has written almost all of her hits to date. Everything from Vision of Love to All I Want for Christmas and Fantasy. And just this past year, she was nominated for a Golden Globe for her song The Star, and she's currently headlining in Vegas and working on a new album. I invited musician and fellow Lambly member Matt Palmer over to talk about Mariah's early career. Again, the five albums she released between 1990 and 1995. Everything from her self-titled debut album through the Daydream album. That's everything before her iconic and career-reshaping Butterfly album in 1997, which we'll save for a part two. We discussed how those albums and her personal life shaped her career and more. This is an Everything Iconic pop dive into Mariah Carey.
Her sweet soprano is a music lover's dream. She first won us over with her Vision of Love. She stirred our emotions, soothed us with I'll Be There, and found the hero in us all. One Sweet Day with Boys to Men turned into 16 weeks at number one. Platinum. Mariah Carey knows how to make it happen.
If you believe in your soul, just hold on tight until let go. You can make it. Make it happen. Yeah. You can make it. Make it happen.
Well, she made it happen, all right.
Okay, guys, I'm here with Matt Palmer. Matt Palmer, you have sort of been on the show before. We used your song, Inevitably.
Yes.
You're a musician, a singer.
Yes.
And you love Mariah. You're a lamb.
The biggest lamb around.
Yeah. Did you listen to her right from the jump off?
No, I was a little young when she first started. But I remember the first time I heard Fantasy, I was in the car and I was like 8 years old and I heard the song. I was like, this is the best song I've ever heard. And I went inside, saw the video and was like, oh my God, she's gorgeous. Like, I'm in love with her. And here we are.
Right. Wait, so how old are you? How old
is that? I am 31, so I was 8 at the time.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. I thought you were young. You have a baby face.
Oh. Okay.
Have people told you that before?
Not really, but I'll take it.
It's a beautiful baby face, but I'm just like, oh, wait, how old is he? I was about to get really jealous.
No, 31. My normal age.
So do you have a favorite song of hers in general?
Yes, it's tough. I would say favorite song overall is a song called Outside on the Butterfly album, last track. Excellent. Favorite single, I think, Always Be My Baby. It's just such a perfect song in every way. So
I am going to drop this right now off the bat. Did you know that I duetted with her to this song?
Excuse me?
I was at her Vegas show and I was in the audience and she came back and I was, I'm not kidding you, like drunker than ever. Is drunker a word? I don't know if that's a word, but I was so blackout drunk, but I'm taking a video. She's like walking from the stage into the aisles, and I'm taking a video, and I say duet very loosely. But so I'm like looking, I did the self-facing, you know, the self-facing, and I'm videoing it. And then she's like walking up behind me. Wow. And then she like stops over my shoulder and I'm singing along and she's singing into the microphone. And literally like I drop the camera and I just say to her, oh my God, I love you so much. Like, and you can hear it. We'll play it. You can hear it in the video. Like, oh, I just shouting.
I had it's a similar interaction in Number One to Infinity. She walked by us. I got our seats because I knew she was walking through the audience. Sure. But she walked by us and there was like a crazy guy trying to get to her. But I was like, I'm not going to be crazy. I'm not going to touch you. I'm just going to say I love you and put my hand on my heart. And she appreciated that. We had like a moment. So that's the best.
I feel like she really loves her fans. And just talking to people that have worked with her or whatever, it's like she loves her fans.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So your favorite album, Butterfly?
Butterfly, yeah. What about you?
I can fluctuate Daydream, Butterfly. Daydream has my favorite song, which is Forever. I've mentioned before. It's like just such a beautiful ballad. But I love Butterfly. I love a lot of it.
Yeah.
I mean, it's all the Christmas album, the first one is just so near and dear to me. But so between 1990 and 1995, she released an album every year. So her self-titled debut album came out in October of 1990. Mm-hmm. Or no, I'm sorry. That's September of 1990. So she came out with an album every year, that self-titled debut album. Do you have a favorite from that one?
I think my favorite on that one is Alone in Love. Alone, you got beyond the haze. I'm lost inside the maze. I really love. I feel like it kind of gives you a preview of like what her sound is going to become.
Right. I'm always amazed that she writes all of her own music. So I feel like she doesn't get enough credit for her songwriting.
I completely agree.
Because she wrote Vision of Love. She wrote All I Want for Christmas Is You. Lyrically, she's brilliant.
Yes.
And people just sort of think of her as a vocalist. And so whenever people say like, oh, she lost her voice now or something like that, I'm like, well, she still wrote all of those songs. She's brilliant.
And I think that's what makes her album so solid all the way through. Because a lot of the times, especially at that time, it was like, we're just trying to get as good singles and then like everything else can be garbage. But since she's writing it all, it's like, oh, the quality's pretty solid all the way through. There's a lot of single choices that are available to us.
Right, right. Yeah. Do you think she's misunderstood?
I do. I think I've been going on dates with people and Mariah's come up shock. And they're always like...
like first date, like, how do you feel?
Always comes up early. And they're like, I mean, she has such a good voice, but what like an awful personality. And I'm I know. It's really like people don't get that she's in on the joke. People don't get that she writes the songs. People think, oh, since she's like over the top and very feminine, that she can't be serious at the same time. And
100%. And I always think too, it's so interesting to look at the early part of her career. Mm-hmm. And she had that sort of career shift around Butterfly where she started dressing sexier and everything like that. And I don't think people realize the reason behind it all.
Yes.
And it's like she was so secluded by Tommy when she was married to Tommy Mottola that she was coming out of her shell in a way. I mean, for those first five albums, she was completely controlled by him. Yeah. So then finally, for the first time in her life, she divorced this man. And gosh, I mean, let's get into the Tommy stuff really quick. So she married Tommy in 1993, but she was with him before that.
Right.
She had been doing background vocals for Brenda Starr. Mm-hmm. And then Brenda gave her demo to Tommy Mottola.
Yes.
So he was 20 years older. She married him when she was 21. Mm-hmm. He was 41. Mm-hmm. I mean, so that in and of itself, it's like that's a father figure, right? And I think it's interesting. He had a lot of control over her. And at a young age, you're so impressionable at that age already. So that's like such an important time of her life. Right. And she's got this man who's much older, more of a father figure to her. And he's controlling what she does. He's controlling the music she makes, the image she's putting out. Yes. And so I think it's only natural that when she comes out of that, she's, a butterfly. She's a butterfly. Truly. This pop dive is going to be dramatic.
I'm excited about it. I completely agree. And the fact that, like, it wasn't even just professionally. It was like he kept her in this house, which I think was in upstate New York or something. And she was sequestered away from everyone. For the first 5 years of her, like, as a famous person, she only, like, came out of that home to work. And she would record her albums there. Like, he wouldn't even let her go out at night and, like, be with with anyone that was not him.
This huge estate that was two pools in it. It was like she was stuck there. And Jermaine Dupri even tells a story when they were working on one of the Daydream remixes. Mm-hmm. He tells a story about how DeBrat came over and DeBrat, you know, kind of took her out of the house.
Right.
And Tommy got so upset. And he, like, in the story, he tells that they had guns, bodyguards with guns and stuff. Like, they were so upset that Mariah got out of the house.
Yeah, like, DeBrat took her to, like, McDonald's, and it was, like, five alarm, like, huge problem. Like, he was not, that was not allowed.
So think about what that would do to someone's, like, mind, brain, everything at such an impressionable age to not be able to leave the house. I mean, it's crazy.
And, yeah, I feel like she's been singing about it and referencing it for, like, since then, like, every album. She has a song on E=MC² called Side Effects, which she's like still dealing with. She's like, it's hard to let people in. It's hard to trust people. I always feel like they're going to try to control me because that's such a time in your life. And to have that kind of taken away from her, I don't know. It's just sad.
And also, I mean, we're skimming ahead, but that feud with J-Lo is largely fueled by Tommy Mottola. And I don't think people understand sort of the root of the feud with J-Lo.
Und was ist mit J-Lo?
I don't know. Die kenne ich nicht.
Whitney's, okay. Whitney's here. She's gobsmacked. Like, what? So let's, do you know?
I do, yeah. So she had gotten off of Columbia Records, which Tommy Mottola was the head of in the U.S., to work on Glitter, which may have been ill-fated, but whatever. So she worked on Loverboy, which is the first single on Glitter, and sampled a song called Firecracker. I don't remember who it was by. Okay. But basically, Tommy was still hearing these early versions of these songs because internationally she was still on Columbia. And so he was like, okay, I know that she has a song that samples Firecracker, and I know she has a song that features Ja Rule. Let's have J-Lo record a song that samples the same song, put it out before, and have the remix feature Ja Rule and put it out before. So by the time Glitter comes out, this will all have been done.
Sort of a pawn, like no one really knows, right? No one really knows if J-Lo knew the extent of all this, but she was sort of the pawn in Tommy Mottola. So it's like, of course, Mariah was pissed off because her lead single was this Loverboy song, and it was like she had to change it all up because she didn't want to look like she was copycatting J-Lo.
Right. And I don't feel like J-Lo really knew about it, but she was just like the person that was...
But so a lot of people just hear the sort of passing things and then they go, oh, Mariah's being a diva with all this stuff. And it's like, Mariah could have commented more on this, but she decided to go the shadier route and just kind of be throw the light shade.
Right.
So I always wonder if J-Lo... You know, I wish J-Lo would say, like, oh, I didn't know. Maybe she has.
I know that she said she's a fan of Mariah's. I don't know that she's ever really referenced what happened.
Yeah.
So, who knows?
So the debut album had these singles. It had Vision of Love, Love Takes Time, Someday, I Don't Want to Cry, and There's Got to Be a Way. So those first four went to number one. Mm-hmm. There's Got to Be a Way didn't. Mm-hmm. But all of those songs, I mean, Love Takes Time, I Don't Want to Cry, these are still songs that we hear today on the radio. Like, they're still played. And then the first four singles that went to number one, that's the first time that happened since the Jackson 5. She has that whistle register. You're a singer. What's the... what's it about her voice that is so special?
Well, obviously the whistle register, the fact that she, it's like very Minnie Riperton, Loving You kind of thing. Like, not a lot of people were doing that since then, especially like doing it and having it sound good. Mm-hmm. But obviously beyond just the range, I feel like people don't even realize how like low she goes. Like, she goes pretty low for like most guys in a lot of songs. So 8 octaves, obviously, I feel like she switches from her head voice into her chest a lot, which is like very Mariah to me. And so she like belts a lot and like kind of goes up and keeps it light and then comes back down. So I don't know. She's very agile. She's very versatile with her voice. I mean, obviously Whitney Houston is like a very close comparison, and Whitney's all power and all like, look at how impressive. And like, Mariah can do that. And I feel like in the earlier albums, they were kind of pushing her to do more of that. But I feel like she can sound different on every single song. Like, kind of her voice evolves in every album. And I don't know. It always touched me, the sound of it.
You know, I just saw that Whitney documentary. Did you see
it? I haven't seen it yet.
Oh, my God. It was so good. And I had seen the Showtime one, too. There was, like, a Showtime. Yeah, and I thought, going into the one that was in theaters, the second one, I thought, oh, I've seen it all. Mm-hmm. But it was still so good.
Right.
I mean, just watching Whitney. And Whitney, too, had gone through so much. I feel like a lot of these artists, when they're shot to superstardom at such a young age, mm-hmm. like, to have that level of success, you have to, things have to happen. It's not, you know, you have to give up things, you have to give up yes. part of your life, and people have to really kind of do crazy things to get you to that point, right? But that really fucks up with your, you know, your mental state yeah. and everything. And it's just, I don't know, it's tough. I think a lot of artists, they sort of try to emulate that Mariah whistle register mm-hmm. or the runs.
Yeah.
What artists do you think really do that well or try to emulate Mariah?
I feel like a lot of female artists come out and like, it's like, we're doing the Mariah thing. Like Jessica Simpson, when she came out with, I Want to Love You Forever. The thing is, she tricked us all. I was like, oh, she's a great singer.
Tricked us all.
She listened back and it's like, oh my goodness.
You
no,
hit the nail on the head.
Not
Matt.
At all.
She tricked us all.
She did.
Jessica Simpson's not a good singer. I love her. I love you, Jess.
Yeah, we love her, but it's not the same like yeah. talent base, I don't think. But I feel like Christina Aguilera and obviously like an Ariana Grande, Leona Lewis, a lot of people come out and it's like, oh, Mariah's my favorite. And like, you can hear it in all of my runs and my whistle register stuff. And
you could tell they grew up with Mariah.
Yes. Yeah. And I had a very tough time with Ariana initially, because especially on this first album or two, it was like, it wasn't even like we're just singing like Mariah. It's like the music was very Mariah too. And it was just like, this is too close. It was like watching Tom Hanks in that animated movie about trains, you know what I'm talking about? And it's just like, this is a little...
Wait, what movie? What's the,
Polar Express. It's like, it's not animated, it's not human, and it's just like a little gross. Yeah. And like, that's how I felt about her initially.
Perfect analogy.
But I've grown to like her a lot more. I feel like she's found more of her sound. And I feel like of the Mariah people, she's probably like doing it closest to what Mariah was doing, and like, but it still has been around the longest. So
yeah,
I kind of respect her.
I always thought Leona Lewis had more talent than we gave her credit for, or she should have been bigger than she was.
Yes,
right.
Yeah, like, she was kind of just that one song, and it was like she had a lot of good songs.
Yeah, actually. And her voice was flawless,
excellent,
flawless. But yeah. I don't know what you know. Sometimes you just need those hits. But yeah. Bleeding Love was a bop.
Oh my gosh, Jesse McCartney, thank you so much.
I know. So then September 1991, we got Emotions, which mm-hmm. of course had the singles Emotions.
Yeah.
It had Make It Happen, Can't Let Go. Can't Let Go peaked at number 2, Make It Happen peaked at number 5, and Emotions went to number 1. Out of all the early albums, I feel like Emotions was not, I don't want to say the worst one. It's sort of the worst one.
Right. It was made very quickly after the debut, and it kind of felt like, okay, rushed. We're giving Mariah, it was rushed, and like we're giving Mariah more control, and she was like, let's do like a gospel jazzy thing, and it's like, that's not bad, right. But it's like, there aren't as many bops. I think Can't Let Go, I must say, is I feel like one of her best, but yeah, I kind of agree with that.
And Emotions is great, but I mean, there's not as many iconic songs.
No. And it was, I feel like a lot about like showcasing how big her range was and like how amazing her voice was, more than like these songs are good.
She got a lot of flack around this time for not doing enough televised performances and touring as much. Mm-hmm. And that was what the response was MTV's Unplugged in 1993, mm-hmm. which of course she had I'll Be There, the cover of the Jackson 5 song, which went to number 1.
Yeah.
Did you watch Unplugged when it aired?
Once I got into it, I like went back and bought everything, including the VHS of the MTV Unplugged. And yeah, it just was like, I guess at some point at the end, she's like, you know, I don't do this a lot. And like, it was just so nice to see her up there sounding really great. And like, she wasn't as comfortable as I think she would become on stage, but she was kind of getting there. But I feel like that also has to do with a lot of the fact that like Mariah Carey has 5 Grammys. Like she has 2 from the first album and then 3 from the Emancipation of Mimi. So all between
there's
that.
There's so many more that she should have gotten.
Yes, but I feel like people were like, oh, she's married to the head of this company. Like she's not a real artist. We never see her out singing. Like how much of this is studio trickery, you know?
It's so interesting you say that, because at the Daydream album, which was 95, mm-hmm. she was nominated for more Grammys than anyone else that year, and she lost all of them. And of course, famously, like the camera kept cutting to her after every single loss, because they had expected her to win all these Grammys. I mean, Daydream was huge. It was so well received. It was nominated more than anyone else. She sang One Sweet Day, which of course is the longest running number one of all time. One Sweet Day. And it's like, she should have gotten a ton of Grammys for that album, that song. I mean, for Fantasy, for everything. And it's like, it's just devastating. The fact that she's only won that. And she references it now all the time about not getting as many Grammys as she should have.
Yeah. And I did watch that live, that like 96 Grammys or whatever. And like, that was a tough day. And the thing is, Alanis Morissette, that was a tough day for an 8-year-old. But I mean, Alanis won everything. And like, Jagged Little Pill is excellent. Right. Like, no shade to Alanis, of course. But like, you couldn't throw her one or two.
I know. One Sweet Day. I mean, come
please, please.
Come on. Back to MTV's Unplugged, that song, I'll Be There, she did it at Michael's funeral.
Yes.
Yeah, she did it at Michael's funeral. Yeah. That's, I mean, her cover of that is just so good with Trailer Ends.
Unbelievable.
And actually, speaking of Michael, Michael stuck up for her publicly with the Tommy stuff. Yeah. I don't know if you ever saw the clip.
I've seen it.
But Michael famously said that Tommy Mottola's evil, and he said that after him and Mariah broke up, I forget the exact words he used, but he said Mariah came over to his house afterwards and said, look, like Tommy did this, this, and this.
Yeah.
And he said it, you know, he was saying it at a public event, and he's like, wait, you guys take down the cameras. And then he sort of says, wait, film it, tape it.
Don't.
So it's kind of like a little inside look. And I think we don't know the extent of their relationship with Michael and Mariah, but in the Whitney documentary, speaking of, they reference how Whitney would go and sit with Michael because they understood each other and they wouldn't even talk. They would just like lay.
Oh, wow.
And I think it's interesting. A lot of artists have that relationship with Michael because no one knows what it's like to be a superstar at that level.
Exactly. Yeah. No, I think Michael, because I think Tommy had unpromoted Invincible and he was upset about that. And so he was saying a lot of things that I'm sure were true. But I think Mariah's team had to come out and be like, well, we didn't say he was racist. Because I think that's also part of the rant.
There was like a little, it was a long rant.
Yeah, it was a long rant. There's a lot to be said there.
So then in 1993, she came out with Music Box. Mm-hmm. Music Box had Dream Lover, which went to number one.
Yes.
Hero, which went to number one and was originally written for Gloria Estefan.
Of course.
Without You, which went to, it peaked at number three in the U.S., but it was her biggest international hit at that time. And then Anytime You Need a Friend, which peaked at number 12. Do you remember that album?
Yeah, that was one of the first ones when I was like going back and buying her old albums that really stuck out to me. Like, I think looking back on it now, just what I've gleaned from Mariah is like, she doesn't love that album. It feels like that was when it was like, okay, we're course correcting. You were supposed to be our biggest artist ever. We gave you a little control and like, you only sold 4 million instead of 10 million. Like, let's do something different. And so it's probably her most adult contemporary. Like, it's her most like, I'm kind of like Celine in this way. Like, I can sing these big ballads with big long notes and people will love them. And like, her voice sounds like almost as good as it'll ever sound. Right. And like, the songs are incredible and show that voice off. I think maybe personally for me, it might be lyrically a little lacking. Like, it's not as like specific and like as she can be as a writer, but I think it's really great. And I love the title track as well, even though it's like, oh, are you singing about Tommy?
Yeah. You know, I remember getting a karaoke cassette of this album.
What?
You know, I had a karaoke machine at this age.
Yes.
So I was, what year was this? This was 93. Yeah. I was 8 years old. And I got a karaoke machine and I remember doing karaoke to Hero in the basement. Like, no one was witnessing it, but there's a tape somewhere of me singing Hero.
Oh my goodness. Yeah, I think there's a tape of me singing, I don't know, it was something, but I was wearing like, how gay was I? I was wearing like a sleeveless black tank top, like lip syncing, maybe Music Box. And I was just like, this is great.
Oh, we need to find that footage.
Yeah, we definitely need to see that.
So then in 94, she came out with Merry Christmas, her first Christmas album. And I was taking notes for this, you know, I was taking notes for all of these albums. Mm-hmm. And when I got to Merry Christmas, I just wrote, I can't. So I just love it. I can't. Like, I love it so, so much. It's so perfect. Good. It's perfect. For Christmas Is You, Joy to the World was released as a single. Oh Holy Night was released as a single. I mean, this album.
It's just like, the thing is, that was one thing that she, even today, she's like, you know what? That was Tommy's idea.
She didn't want to do that.
I didn't want to do that. I felt like that was something old people did. But then after that, everybody was doing Christmas albums. Because like, Mariah's was just so gigantic. I feel like even now, like, you listen to the, like, Kelly Clarkson original Christmas songs. Some of them are great, but some of them it's like, oh, you want this to be Christmas is You. And that's just a big ask. Like, not even...
No one can do it. No one's come up with a song since. But I always say, All I Want for Christmas is You. It's like, that song, even if that's the only thing Mariah ever did, she deserves our respect.
Absolutely.
Like, if that was the only thing she ever did in this world, she deserves our respect for that.
I wonder how much she makes on that song every year. I always think about that. I'm just like, this song is going to outlive all of us. It's going to outlive rock and roll. It's just going to pay for everything for her entire family from now on.
I mean, last Christmas she had a film version of it, an animated film. I watched it.
I
watched it. It's like for little kids.
Right.
I also really love off that album, I Miss You Most at Christmas Time. It's such a stunningly beautiful ballad.
Yes.
I get by without you.
I always like Mariah's ballads.
I was listening to that in preparation for today and, like, walking in the sun to West Elm, and I was like, I'm sad about Christmas. Like, I'm just currently sad about Christmas. Sure. Just, oh.
The lyrics to that song are just so heartbreaking, and it's beautiful. I remember watching the video, like, on a Christmas Eve, putting on the TV, on VH1, I remember, they were playing, like, all of Mariah's Christmas videos around that time. And I remember just being a kid and watching, they all sort of had that same visual look at the time. Isn't Tommy in the All I Want for Christmas is You video?
Santa.
He's Santa. Yeah.
Ugh, I know.
I know, it's dark. That's the darkest moment of this timeline.
Absolutely. The inclusion of Tommy and everything is always like, ooh.
Have you seen her Christmas tours?
I went and saw her last December in Vegas for Christmas, and it was really incredible and excellent. It was excellent. Excellent.
You know, when she came out with the second holiday album, she did a special for ABC or NBC.
Yeah.
And it was a concert special, and Matt and I went.
Oh, my God.
And it was the best thing in the world.
And she was pregnant.
She was super pregnant, like super pregnant.
And so she wasn't drinking.
And still wearing the same sort of like,
of course,
low, sexy Santa outfit.
You saw O Santa Live.
Oh, my God. I saw O Santa Live. Her mom, Patricia, came out and did.
Oh, Queen Pat.
Pat had to do it like two or three times. Oh. She did Oh Come All You Faithful. Yeah. She does a duet with Mariah. And I think she did it two or three times because Pat was nervous. I guess Patricia, her mom, comes from opera singing. Mm-hmm. And they told us at the taping that Patricia is not used to people clapping. Oh. So when Patricia would come on, she did this like big, note run or something like that. Mm-hmm. And people started clapping right off the bat. Yeah. And it freaked Patricia out because she wasn't, used to that. And so Mariah, I remember, came out and she's like, oh, yeah, if you guys could just not clap. Like, my mom comes from opera where you're not supposed to clap until the end, I believe, or something like that. I don't know the opera rules. But yeah, it was so good. She was so super pregnant. And again, still wearing heels.
Of course.
Like, still wearing heels. But what a dream. I remember just being so excited, and everyone was wearing Santa hats, and it was maybe October. It was like really, so then in 95, she came out with Daydream, which we've talked about this. And then, so the singles from this album were Fantasy, which was number one, One Sweet Day, number one, Open Arms, which was a cover, didn't go to number one, but still great. Always Be My Baby, which went number one. And I always talk about grocery store anthems. That's a grocery store anthem.
My gosh.
And then Forever, which is my number one.
Number one on your chart.
And then Underneath the Stars, which was one of Mariah's favorites. Mm-hmm. And a lot of the Lambly really loves Underneath the Stars. Yes. I mean, it's sort of like a very popular song amongst super fans. Mm-hmm. So I want to talk a bit about Fantasy. That really changed the game, right?
Absolutely.
You're nodding along. Explain why.
Well, that was obviously my first introduction to Mariah. I think and obviously the pop version, the main version with the big chorus, is like iconic and excellent. Everyone remembers that. And it like is the soundtrack to every time I go on a roller coaster, I think of it. Sure. But the remix with ODB was such a big deal because, again, her last studio album was her most adult contemporary. It was like her Celine record. And now her first single off her new album, it features this rapper from Wu-Tang Clan. And it's just like, oh my gosh. Like,
yeah, and people didn't know that she was a huge fan of Wu-Tang Clan. Yeah.
No. And so they were just like, what is this? What is Mariah doing? But that song was a huge hit, and I think she was still presenting innocently enough that it wasn't like when Honey came out, and it was like, oh, God, she's in, heels and a midriff. But so it still was just such it was the first, I feel like, superstar pop artist who had a rapper on their song, and it was like a huge, giant hit. Obviously, like, Mary J. Blige was doing it, but no one like Mariah Carey was.
Right. And now all the girls do it.
Yes. Me and Mariah.
go back like babies with pacifiers. That's right. Old dirt dog, no liar. Keep the fantasy hot like fire.
Jump, jump, jump.
Let me see you do the stomp. Girls, let me see you shake your right. Fellas, get from the back and the right. Let's do it, do it, do it.
Every single one of them. And she got shit for that for years when, like, album track lists would come out and be like, featuring the Brat, featuring whoever, whoever. People would always be like, oh, she can't do anything alone. I just want to hear her, blah, blah, blah. And now there's a rap song category at the Grammys. And it's like, you should call that the Mariah. Hello.
I just got chills and goosebumps. I'm just like, listen, I feel like I just listened to just someone speak for the first time, or like a child speak for the first time, and I got so excited. I'm like, yep, she did that.
She did do it.
She did that. I love that album so much.
It's so good.
I think critically it was her best album yet, and that was the first transition into R&B music, which again she later did more and more of, mm-hmm. especially with the Butterfly album. Mm-hmm. It was nominated for 6 Grammys, like I said.
Yes.
She didn't win a single one. Oh, yes. And that Grammy performance with Boyz II Men of One Sweet Day, mm-hmm. I want that played at my funeral. Like, the Grammy performance of it, I want that played.
I mean...
It's true. If you guys are around, make sure it's
we'll set that up. Okay. Have you seen, if anyone hasn't watched this, there's on YouTube a full like hour and a half concert of her on Daydream.
The concert, Tokyo.
Like Tokyo Dome.
I watch it once a week.
No one has ever sounded that good.
Never.
Period. End of statement. Yeah. Like, she just, it's an hour and a half of her, like, singing her face off, like, the highest notes you've ever heard belted. She sings Hero and, like, does it much more difficultly than the album version. It's just
flawless.
An alien. Like, I get that you have no life and you must just sit back in your like house and drink water and tea, but man, it works.
Do you think that was her vocal peak? When do you think her vocal peak was?
Personally, yes. A lot of people prefer it a little when she was younger and like it was kind of like a heavier tone, but I feel like that but it's also like the first time that I really got into her, but like I feel like that kind of that was very her, because at the beginning you could almost say, oh, this sounds a little Whitney-esque, like this sounds kind of Whitney, but this was so specifically her, like 5 years in. And I don't know, I felt like her belt had gotten a little lighter and, you know, there was more head voice stuff and the whistle register was less of like a party trick and more of like, oh, we'll have this as a background element. Mm-hmm. I don't know. I think that was just... I've never been more moved by a live performance.
Sure.
Yeah.
I know that. I mean, the whole thing on YouTube is great.
Unbelievable.
And you can also buy it on Amazon as a DVD.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Do you have a favorite music video from this era, from the 1990 to 95?
I really love the Always Be My Baby video.
Yeah.
With, like, those two kids, and she's just, like, the narrator and, like, a campfire. And, like, I remember I was, like...
The tire swing.
And I remember, like, very soon thereafter, my friends at school were like, oh, we're going to go to camp for the summer. And I was like, oh, my God. This is going to be just like Always Be My Baby. I can't wait. It was not. But I still enjoyed it.
Did you ever dream of going to Camp Mariah? Because I did.
Oh, my God. Absolutely. Yeah. But then you'd read about it and then be like, oh, I'm not a candidate.
Yeah.
I don't think this is for me.
So this was 5 albums in 5 years. Like, that's an insane level of, work ethic.
Yes.
And I mean, the only thing we've seen sort of since is Rihanna has, of course, famously come out with an album a year. She's not anymore, but she did for the first few years.
Yeah.
But she wasn't writing everything. Mariah was writing every song of this. Like, that's insane.
It's crazy. I mean, I guess it was helpful that she didn't go on tour. But back then, she didn't really have to. Like, you could still make money in the music industry and not be on tour all the time.
You say that. What do you mean now? Now you can't.
Well, now, like, artists make a lot less money from streaming. And from the deals they make with labels now, it's like a 360 deal. So, like, the label gets a piece of everything. And it's not like, oh, this is the artist piece that they're always going to get. It's like, oh, they get a... The label gets a piece of the touring and a piece of the merchandise and a piece of every single part of your career, essentially. And there's just a lot less money being made.
Wait, so what was it then?
Back then, albums were selling a lot more. She was writing a lot of those songs. And then it was like that record label only made money off the albums, basically. And so if you went on tour and stuff, it's like, oh, well, this is all money that's going to the artist. But it's just a lot harder nowadays with streaming and, you know, things to actually make money off an album.
I don't know if you know this, but do you have any idea, like, off a number one song, what somebody would make back then? Like, I know that's sort of a broad question.
I'm not sure. I think as songwriters, like, if a song was number one like One Sweet Day and like number one for 16 weeks, you know, I remember The Dream, and he wrote Umbrella and Single Ladies, and I remember him saying he made like $10 million on each of those songs. So I would imagine something like that. Right, exactly. Yeah. I would think something like that, but
I feel like Macy Gray, I read an interview with her saying, like, you, I don't know why I was reading Macy Gray interviews, but I think she said that you just need one hit to last. If you have one, right. If you're a one-hit wonder, you can live off that.
Yeah, I think if you wrote it, absolutely. Yeah.
So then her relationship with Tommy ended shortly after the Daydream album. Mm-hmm. And then this sort of changed her career indefinitely, mm-hmm. right? Like when Butterfly came out in 1997, that's when she started dressing sexier. That was sort of her, for lack of a better term, emancipation. Mm-hmm. And this is your favorite album.
Yes, right? It is.
And I know we're not going to get too deep into Butterfly, right. But what do you love about Butterfly?
I love that it is... She's coming from a place of, like, I really have something to say. Like, the ballad Butterfly is written from the perspective of, like, this is what I wish Tommy would have said to me, essentially. And, like, every single song has a meaning behind it that's really strong. I think she's also vocally obviously very good still. And still walking the line of, like, oh, R&B hip-hop, but, like, still there's Whenever You Call on it. Like, very pop ballad, straightforward. It's so good. And I just feel like she's... at her peak artistically, and she's got so much going on that, you know, it's always sad, but it's like the Adele album's really good right after she goes through a breakup. And then when she's like happy, you're like, uh-oh, I don't know. So with Mariah, it's just like you got kind of every sound that she's best at. And
she was still so young at this point. I mean, she was still in her 20s doing this. And... yeah, and to imagine all the crap she got around this time when she started dressing sexier, it was like everyone gave her shit. I remember her being on Rosie O'Donnell, and Rosie O'Donnell, who of course I love, but Rosie was like, I need you to stop dressing like that. Right. And Mariah sort of kindly said, like, you know, I haven't been able to wear what I want for 5 years.
Right.
And so I always hate, even now I hate when people are like, oh, she can't dress like that.
No.
It's like she was literally not able to dress however she wanted for 5 or 6 years.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, let her wear whatever the fuck she
wants.
And also,
don't tell women what to wear in general. Thank you, Whitney. There was recently, did you see Madonna? She just turned 60, right? And there was just this big headline. I forget the where it was published. I think maybe The Guardian, but maybe not. I don't know. But they were, you know, referencing that she was dressing inappropriately for being 60, or it said, and it's like, come on, let her wear whatever, do whatever the fuck she wants. The fact that Madonna, I think... And look, I'm not always a huge Madonna fan, but I think it's so important for her at 60 years old to be coming out and doing whatever the fuck she wants to do and dressing however the fuck she wants to dress and dating whoever she wants and showcasing that women at 60 years old, a woman doesn't have to go shrivel up and die. It's like,
thank you.
But if there's some weird, and I know we always talk about the double standard with men, but there's some weird thing where it's like women aren't allowed to get or when they reach a certain age, they should retire.
Yes.
And it's like men aren't expected to retire at 50 or 60.
And especially in music, like, I honestly, the radio does not play you if you are a woman over a certain age. And like, Pharrell can have happy. How old is Pharrell? Pharrell looks great, of course, but like, he's in his 40s too. And it's like, why does he get the chance to be like the coolest guy around? And like, it's like, well, Mariah, maybe if you have a song with Miguel, we'll play it for a little bit and then we'll drop it. And it's just, it's not fair.
It's not fair at all. I mean, she's come out with a lot of that Thirsty off the her last album had a lot of great hits.
Preaching the choir.
Yeah, but it was like Me, I Am Mariah we're talking about.
Yeah.
That album was so good.
Yes.
But there's something about, I don't know what it is. It's like, I think some people don't really get that she's in on, you mentioned her being in on the joke. Yeah. It's like some people don't see that with her.
Right.
And then now we've talked a lot about her bipolar announcement
with
People Magazine. And it's like, there's just so much going on there that I think people don't really give credence to, and they just would rather shrug off and say, oh, she's past her prime and she's dressing like a slut or whatever it is.
I read something, I think it might have been a review of like the top like 100 songs on Rolling Stone that they put out of like the past decade or something. And someone said, We Belong Together wasn't that good. She was her prime then. And I was like, are you fucking kidding me?
I was so pissed when I saw that.
Insane. It's like that was the biggest song of the entire decade. Like, 2 decades in a row, Mariah wrote the biggest song, wrote and performed, and like, you're gonna say that? Like, are you out of your mind?
What you just said is she had the Billboard's biggest song of the decade for 2 decades in a row. 1990, it was Vision.
One Sweet Day.
One Sweet Day. And then this next decade, it was We Belong Together.
Yes.
And yeah, this what was it? Rolling Stone? Yeah, they said, I don't know if it was Rolling Stone.
I don't remember
somewhere.
Who it was.
They said it was like not that great or something. Like, I was like, oh my
ridiculous.
God, are you kidding me? That song was insane.
It was everywhere.
We talked a lot about Tommy's relationship. And in 2005, she said, that relationship shaped who I am. It beyond shaped me. I still have nightmares about it. Mm. And again, we've heard so many stories about that time period, about between 1990 and 95, mm. about her life with Tommy. And she did get out of the relationship, but it didn't end there. Like you said, with Glitter, that was 1999. Yeah. He was still doing things to sort of, you know, fuck with her.
Absolutely.
He had so much power in the industry and over her.
Yeah.
I don't know. It's.
It's sad because I feel like I've seen clips of her being asked about like when that whole Rihanna and Chris Brown thing was happening. I feel like Larry King asked her maybe like, have you, do you know anything about like abusive relationships? Which, by the way, like weird question, Larry King, but like,
I still watch his web show sometimes and it's like so batshit.
Is it? He seems like a
he's
weird
like
guy.
Very old. I mean, speaking of like people that shouldn't be working anymore. Glare. Every time you watch, it's like I'm on the edge of my seat. Like, is he gonna? Like, is he? Is this, you know, being broadcast from the beyond? Because he's just like, it's like a zombie or something. But I still watch it all the time. Like, I'll check it every a couple of weeks. I'll go into Hulu and check it. That's where. And I'll just see who he had on. And sometimes we'll have like a good random celebrity.
Right.
But yeah, I mean, he books like the kind of people that we book on this show. It's like, it's like he's not still booking Mariah Carey.
Right.
But, yeah.
Anyway. I think he, and then Mariah said about the abuse. She was like, well, there are different types of abuse.
Right.
So, yeah, I mean, I think there's no question that she was emotionally abused there. Just because if you have someone that's so much in control of every part of your life, and like you said, and she says, like, you know, she, in the song Petals, she said she, like, sought out a patriarch, basically, so young, predictably. And it's like, yeah, she didn't grow up with her dad, and she wanted someone like that in her life, but to have him romantically in charge and business in charge, it's just too much.
And imagine how much strength it would take to get out of that relationship for someone who is so powerful in the industry and had control over your career. Yeah. So not just your love life, but also your career. It's like the strength to get out of that.
I know.
Is, I mean, good job.
I know. People give her a lot of
As
shit.
I said that, I got goosebumps about what I was saying.
That's good.
I was like, oh my God, this is amazing.
Oh my God, this is so right.
One of the things that people always say about Tommy Mottola is that he made her career. Do you think that she would have had as big of a career without him? I mean, I know she gives him props and say he definitely helped her career.
Right. Well, yeah, I think what people don't talk about because it wasn't a part of the story at the time was she had another deal on the table with Warner Brothers. Like, it's not like Tommy was her only option, but if he was this invested in her and was going to put this much money behind her, of course she'd go with him. But yeah, I hate that because it's like, how could you discount her talent? And then if afterwards, after Tommy not only wasn't around but was trying to actively ruin her career, she became as big as she ever was again. So,
right. And I mean, he married Talia.
Yeah.
And she wasn't a huge star.
No,
so he wasn't able to make her into a huge star.
And I think he was the head of Lindsay Lohan's record label, Casablanca, when she came on music. And we love Lindsay, but like, Rumors was the only hit, I think.
Although I do love that song, Daughter to Father.
Oh, it's great. You know, it's great.
Which she directed that music video. So, first of all, second of all, there's a dance remix to that. I remember around that time, like, it would play at the gay clubs, like the dance remix of the song about daughter to father, which is
iconic.
That's so dark though. That, like I remember being at a gay club and they were just playing that. They were playing the music video where she's like yelling at her, you know, father, and the lyrics are like so. I think it's even called personal or something, like,
yeah,
in parentheses it says
personal,
like personal raw. You know, but still, like, the gay club was playing like a dance beat of this song.
Absolutely.
And it's just like, oh my God, that song. Oh, and I just want to say that Tommy, in his book, he mentioned that he shouldn't have been with Mariah, right? So he's been pretty open about this stuff too. So it's not like I know we're hating on Tommy a lot, but he seems to have recognized that this
Absolutely.
Was a poor relationship.
Yeah, I think he says, like, his therapist told me not to be in the relationship and I should have listened.
Right.
So we are all in agreement there.
Right. Do you have a favorite Mariah moment, a favorite Mariah lyric?
Oh, my goodness.
I mean, because lyrically, she's so...
Lyrically, you go. I'll have to think of
it. I mean, there's so many. I love These Chickens Is Ashen Lotion.
Of course.
From Shake It Off.
Chickens is ashen on lotion. Baby, come and get it. Let me give you what you
need. That is a classic.
But I think Heartbreaker, some of the lyrics in Heartbreaker are just amazing.
No, absolutely. I think looking back to, like, the Looking In lyrics and the Outside lyrics, I love how at the end of most of her albums, it's like, we're going to do a sad, introspective ballad. And those are always the ones that I'm like, I feel you, girl.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay, so we're going to take a little break here, and then we're going to come back and talk to you a little bit about your music and your stuff.
Oh, my God.
Icons, if you're anything like me, you love to spend TV commercial breaks browsing real estate listings. Now, I love watching my favorite shows and also looking up homes, especially the ones that I know that I can't afford. And my favorite app to use is Redfin. When Matt and I were looking for a home, we used the Redfin app to search for homes in the area and within our budget. The Redfin app made it super easy. Now, Redfin updates their listings every 2 minutes and sends you personalized recommendations. So finding the home that's perfect for you has never been easier. Plus, if you see something you like, you can book a tour straight from the app. And when you're ready to buy, an experienced local Redfin agent can guide you through the whole process. And if you're looking to sell, Redfin agents know how to get you the best price possible for your home. That's because they sell twice as many homes as other agents. With the listing fee as low as 1%, Redfin's fees are half of what others often charge, which means you'll have more money to put towards your next home. So Redfin made it so easy to filter out the homes that didn't meet or have the necessities I wanted. I still use it to search for homes close by and in the cities my favorite reality TV stars live. Download the Redfin app to get started. Ever since I saw Clueless, I wanted to have the most amazing wardrobe, and that includes all of the clothes inside the wardrobe closet, and that's why I'm excited to talk to you about Quince. Now, Quince has you covered with truly timeless pieces that never go out of style. You'll have them in your closet forever. Quince has all sorts of must-haves. I'm talking Mongolian cashmere crew neck sweaters from $50. I have a blue cashmere crew neck sweater I got from them that I get so many compliments on all the time. I love it. Plus, iconic 100% leather jackets and versatile flow-knit activewear. The best part, all Quince items are priced 50 to 80% less than similar brands. By partnering directly with top factories, Quince cuts out the cost of the middleman and passes us savings all over to us. And Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing practices, along with premium fabrics and finishes. Love that. Makes you feel good about shopping with Quince. Again, I've gotten a lot of stuff there. Just good quality pieces and a lot of different options if you're looking to upgrade your wardrobe. So indulge in the affordable luxury. Go to quince.com/iconic for free shipping on your order and 365-day returns. That's Quince, Quince.com/iconic to get free shipping and 365-day returns, quince.com/iconic.
So, Matt, we talked a lot about Mariah. Has she really shaped your own musical career?
Absolutely. Like, she's the reason that I wrote my first song. My first song was, like, kind of a ripoff of Hero. I wrote it when I was, like, 14.
Love it.
But there...
What was it called? Shiro?
Oh, God. Well, I think it was called Don't Let Your Heart Go. It's,
oh, I love that.
It was a long time ago. But, yeah, so I wrote music all through high school. And while people were out, like, having parties and, like, making out with people, I was, like, at home making music. So I went to college at the Clive Davis Department of Recorded Music at NYU. And so amazing. I went there. And it was cool. Yeah, it was, like, I learned a lot about everything. But I learned the most about songwriting, which I think is my strongest suit. And so, yeah, I don't think I would be doing this if it weren't for her.
Yeah. So tell me about your music. Where can people find it?
Well, it is up. My name is Matt Palmer, and I just put out a visual EP entitled Get Lost. So there's 7 songs.
And it's so good. It goes chronologically.
Yes, it does.
Music videos. It's so fantastic.
Oh, thank
and we
you.
Featured one of the songs on
Yes,
the
he
show.
Featured Inevitably, which people seem to really like. That one's like very happy, up-tempo kind of thing. But yeah, it's on YouTube. It's on Spotify. It's everywhere you can stream or listen to music. I, you know, would love if you went and watched it on YouTube because, you know, they're videos. You might as well see them.
Yeah, watch it.
Yeah.
Anything else you want to plug, Matt?
I guess I have my, I have a YouTube channel with my roommate if you like hearing me talk about mostly Mariah Carey, but also other music. It's called Two Gay Mats. We're on YouTube and Patreon. And thank you.
Love it.
And yeah, if you want to hear us talk about music and musical theater and stuff.
And where can people find you on social media?
I'm at Matt Palmer Music everywhere. Instagram, Twitter, all the things.
Matt, this was so delightful.
So great.
You know, I could talk to you about Mariah forever. And we got to do a part two where we, you know, do the next 5 albums or something.
Literally, and we'll be here as
okay, we're gonna do
as
it.
Possible.
And I also, we have so much. There's so many things. Thank you guys so much for listening. You mentioned Patreon. We have a Patreon page. If you want to support our Patreon, go to patreon.com/everythingiconic and support this podcast. For $4 or more, you get access to all of our bonus episodes, plus Real Houses of New York recaps, and so much more. Please find me on social media at Danny Pellegrino on Twitter and Instagram. We have a Everything Iconic Facebook group. I want to thank Samson Technologies for sponsoring the show. show. I want to thank Whitney for producing. Okay, I love you guys so much for listening. Bye, Matt. Thank you.
Bye,
I love you.
Thank you for having me.
You guys. Thank you. Bye.